So, we come to the sermon, I suppose. Kids, you're not escaping today, sorry. But I've tried to make it that I'm using the shorter words so that everybody can understand. So, the big celebration of Jesus' birthday is over. What comes next? New Year. What comes along with New Year? New Year resolutions. Have you decided to make any yet? I made one a few years ago that I've kept ever since. I made a resolution never to make any more New Year's resolutions. I've kept it! I don't regret it. But all around me at this time of year, people are starting up a new life with new promises. There are the promises of the children to put their toys away without whinging when they're asked to tidy up. To not batter their sibling. To work harder at school. To be polite. The list is endless. At least, it always seemed endless to me when I was a child. And I was expected to make New Year's resolutions, and there was always a certain amount of grown-up guidance as to the sort of things I might choose to promise. Then there are the promises that the grown-ups make. They might promise to spend at least one weekday evening each week with their family. They might promise not to work during their lunch break. Hold your hands up if you've ever worked through lunch. Make it two hands if that's regularly. Yes. They might promise to drive at a more sensible speed, such as the legal limit. All sorts of things. But there's one promise that all the grown-ups here and many of the children have made several times. And nowadays, Christmas reminds me of that promise. It was quite a while ago that I took that photograph. 6 years to the day. And as soon as I saw baby Abigail, I made a promise to help to look after her in any way that I could. There was only me and God who heard that promise. But I didn't need to say anything to anybody else. They knew all about my promise by the look on my face. Some months later, lots of people made a very similar promise in church that lots of people here have made many times over the years. Challenge. If you have made that promise to God about someone else, are you keeping it? And 6-year-old Abigail? She got chosen to be an angel in the nativity play at her church. She said that she had to tell the shepherds about the baby being born. A responsible job for a 6-year-old. I remember a mother being 6. I remember me being 6. What's it like to be 6? You can probably work out what the wiggly nines on the paper mean. You can almost certainly recognise your own name, even if you find learning hard. You can count, even if you find maths difficult. You can decide what's a fair split of labour or things, you know when your brother or sister has got the bigger share. But it's awkward being six as well. Your hands are smaller than grown-ups' hands. But you have to use the grown-up size cutlery because you're not a baby anymore. You're not as tall as a grown-up. But you have to use the grown-up size chairs at the table. So your chin rests on the table and you get told off for not sitting up straight. So you sneak one foot underneath your behind so you're tall enough not to dangle your chin in your food when you open your mouth for the next bite, and you get told off having your feet on the furniture. You can't win. Wouldn't it be terrible to always be a baby? Wouldn't it be terrible to always be six? Isn't it good that God doesn't let us stay the same? He helps us grow from 1 day old to 1 year, 6 years, 9 years, and then on into being grown-ups and maybe having children of our own to care for and to bring up to know and love God. That reminds me of what Paul said to the Ephesians in chapter 4, verse 14. So we're no longer children, tossed back and forth by waves and carried about by every wind of teaching, by the trickery of people who craftily carry out their deceitful schemes. There are other places where Paul refers to people growing up. In 1 Corinthians, he speaks about not being able to feed the church with anything other than spiritual milk because they haven't grown up yet. We're expected to be grown-up Christians. We're expected to start off as new baby Christians. We're expected to grow, to become able to tell other people about Jesus, to become grown-up Christians. We are not expected to become Christians one day and be grown-up Christians the next. Bit like New Year's resolutions, really. You'll make a promise. You'll try to keep it. You won't be able to keep it. That's the point where most people give up. That's the point where a wiser friend needs to listen, pray with you, give you advice, support, encouragement. That may be the point at which you, however long or short a time you've been a Christian, however young or old you are, need to take the role of the wiser friend. That is never easy. It's part of promising to care for others. People have always cared for people. That's part of God's plan. Right back in the beginning of Genesis, in the creation story, God reckoned it was a bad idea for people to be alone. He made Eve so that Adam had a companion. He's made each of us and put us here and in families so that we're not alone. We're part of a caring community. And there's two sides to that. There's what we can give, and there's what we can receive. And both of those are hard. If you're good at receiving, it's hard to give. Maybe you're still learning. Maybe you have a lot of needs. Maybe there doesn't seem to be anything you can give because you're you. Here, now, too young, too old, too poor. If you're good at giving, it's hard to receive. It feels like scrounging. Maybe you're too busy, too used to being the carer, not in need of what others can give. Remember this, the disciples were quite capable of washing their own feet. But Jesus did it for them. Peter objected, of course, but Peter had to learn to receive the service of someone else. Remember that giving someone the chance to serve you is also a giving. So where are you on the give-receive spectrum? Are you serving God the right way? Where are you on the age range spectrum? Are you at the not yet 6-year-old end, or the 106-year-old end, or somewhere in between? What are you going to gift to those you have promised to care for? Time? Cash? Love? A listening ear? A home? Your prayers? The chance to care? What will it cost you? Because each of those gifts is practical, and each of those gifts is costly in one way or another. As costly to you as the gifts the Magi brought to the baby Jesus. Gold, frankincense, myrrh. Each of them expensive enough that you get told that a little goes a very long way. Gold, so valuable that it might take you all year to earn a small amount. Frankincense, that you take a piece less than the size of the last joint of your little finger and you burn it to fill the room with scent for many hours. Myrrh, so potent that an even tinier piece is enough to mask bad smells for days. The Magi, with their three gifts, gave away several fortunes to a baby, along with their worship. What will you resolve to give in the new year that is nearly upon us? What new practical steps of faith do you choose to take? How can we here, your family in Christ, help you to keep these promises? Let's have a time of silent reflection.